Today at 3159 South State Street, you'll find the Illinois Institute of Technology's campus. But in 1905, that address was home to a widow named Henrietta Lee. And one of Lee's tenants, Robert Sengstack Abbott, would use that location to fundamentally shift the city of Chicago and black culture by founding the Chicago Defender newspaper. The Chicago Defender is a storied black publication with a remarkable heritage. It was the first black paper to have a circulation of more than 100,000 readers, and is given a lot of credit for sparking the Great Migration. But Eitan Michaeli, author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America, says that if you knew anything about Robert Abbott, you wouldn't be surprised by his paper's success.
He's someone who is raised in rural Georgia, talks his way into the Hampton Institute, then as now one of the premier African-American institutions of higher learning in the United States. He gets a degree in journalism at a time that this is a rare thing for anyone to have. Got another degree when he was in Chicago and still struggled.
Abbott received a law degree from Chicago Kent College of Law, but his dark skin and unique Southern accent kept him from finding work as a lawyer. But as time went on, Abbott started to notice a void in Chicago's media landscape.
If you were African American, you were essentially invisible to the white-owned press, meaning that any coverage of an African-American person was heavily scrutinized by an editor and would often have a parenthesis after the first reference explaining that the person was African-American, you know, using one of the older terms for African-American as a way to be respectful. But really what they were doing was singling out African-Americans.
So, to remedy this, Abbott decided to put his journalism background to work and start the Chicago Defender. Starting the paper wasn't easy, partly because Abbott didn't have a lot of money. He lived in a single room he was renting from Mrs. Lee. He also didn't have any employees. But on May 5th, 1905, Abbott published the paper's first issue in his room. After that first issue, Abbott realized he wouldn't be able to afford an office, but Mrs. Lee offered space in her unit for Abbott to use as his newsroom. So Abbott had a place to publish his paper, but he still needed a way to get it into the hands of the black community. Fortunately, Michaeli says Abbott had an idea for that, too.
He understood also that he could create this newspaper in Chicago and get it to the African-American masses through the U.S. mail. That the U.S. mail would be a reliable way to, like, get the newspaper out. He also worked with the Pullman porters on the rails, African-American men who traveled around the country from one end to the other, to every small hamlet, to every large city, and were in touch with African-American communities that way around the country. These were the perfect salespeople and initially circulation agents for The Defender.
The Defender's readership grew rapidly. That was due in part to the groundbreaking way it chose to cover black people and the struggle for equality. For one, it never used the then contemporary terms like Negro or colored to describe black people. It instead used the term the race. And because The Defender was nestled in Chicago, it had more freedom to call out racism head on, creating a militant style of storytelling that most black people had never seen. As Abbott began to realize the advantage his paper enjoyed by being in the American North, he decided to use it to create something else revolutionary by asking many of his readers across the South to leave their homes and move north. But he wasn't sold on doing that right away.
He did not encourage other African Americans to come to Chicago at first. It was very difficult to make a living. The unions discriminated against African Americans. There was intense competition for any other kind of job. He just simply did not think that African Americans had much of a chance in Chicago as compared to the opportunities that existed in the South. Then World War I happens. Factories all over Chicago, as well as slaughterhouses, suddenly are looking for workers, lots of workers. The unions even say they will let African Americans into their unions. And now Abbott begins to change his mind slowly, still not with a lot of enthusiasm until he begins to see that the migration is hurting the Jim Crow South. The oligarchs of the South, who had just a few years earlier been talking about even expelling African Americans because there were way too many people to figure out what to do with, now are begging African Americans to stay. But when Robert Abbott sees this, he realizes that the migration can be a weapon against Jim Crow. And then he begins to become enthusiastic to the point of saying that it's your patriotic duty to migrate as a way to hurt the South. That encourages first hundreds, then thousands, then tens of thousands, then hundreds of thousands, and eventually millions of people to start coming from the South to cities all over the North.
Cities like New York, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Detroit began to see their black population swell. And as for Chicago, its black population grew by more than 200,000 people in just 25 years. And the paper's popularity didn't just mean more black residents in urban centers. It also meant great financial success for Robert Abbott. Less than 15 years after launching the paper, he had enough money to buy his landlady, Mrs. Lee, a new house. And while the paper's popularity was born out of the work it did to shine a spotlight on issues of racial injustice, that wasn't all it did. It had a variety of sections like editorials, an arts and culture section, society pages, and cartoons. It also celebrated black achievement like weddings, graduations, and debuts. In 1923, the Defender created a first-of-its-kind section for kids called the Bud Billiken page. 6 years later, the paper launched the Bud Billiken Parade to celebrate black children. In 1940, Robert Abbott died. As he was ailing, the paper fell out of his hands, but that same year, Robert's 20-something-year-old nephew, John Sengstack, managed to get the paper back in the family.
So Mr. Sengstack had to get the paper back in his hands, which he did through some crafty negotiation and some clever legal work, and also by really winning over the staff and the kind of principals of the paper. And so he had to hit the ground running, and he took over at a time that the African-American community was migrating politically from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party. And Mr. Sengstack was really a force in kind of moving African Americans from the Republicans to the Democrats and building African American clout with the Democrats. By the Kennedy administration, he had walk-in privileges to the White House. Yeah, that, he even was able to wield that clout with the new Mayor Daley, because he knew the old Mayor Daley.
John Sengstack would run the Defender until his death in 1997. And today, even though both he and Robert Abbott are no longer with us, the paper is still in operation. It transitioned to a digital format in 2019, but it still uses many of the principles it used under their leadership. The content still seeks to examine issues of racial justice. The Bud Billiken Parade, which is now one of the largest parades in the country, still happens every year on the city's south side. And the paper still celebrates black achievements. I even had the experience of having it highlight one or two of my own. 120 years later, the paper is still going strong and hopes to keep going for at least 120 more.